all around, and so many people were being harmed, I was really scared that I would lose my compassion for the Chinese. Holmes tells that story. He's very proud of that look. I mean, so I was talking a little bit like this, you know, not, as I said, I didn't tell the story about the Mongolian Lama, they couldn't handle that. But the atmosphere in the room, it was dead silent. You could hear a pin drop. And I was actually quite shocked, because, I mean, I've talked to kids before, and you do get this kind of thing, but I thought to myself, are they usually this quiet when there's a class? Are they usually like this? I was trying to figure out what was going on. And they, if you looked around, they were kind of like... And then we came to the end, and the bell rang, ding, 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 and they got out and they ran out. You know, they got out and they left. So that was the end of the first session. And some of them stayed. And the principal says to me, he says, okay, look, hang on there, I'm going to go and get the next class. The next class comes and he runs off and he just herds in more classes, he herds in more kids, and the kids are packing the room again. And in the interval, I went off to the bathroom with one of the girls, and she was looking at me. She said, oh, you know, I'm very interested in Buddhism. And she said, I was watching you when the video was on. She said, you're very peaceful. And I said, well, I don't normally think of myself as being peaceful. But, I mean, if that's, you know, if that's what she saw, okay, fine, I just accept that. I came back, and the guy starts his rave again. Da-da-da-da, I met the Dalai Lama, he's a great guy. She's going to say, watch the video, click, and we're on to the gory scenes again. You know, more people being killed, more this, more that. And finally gets you right to the very end, and you get the scene where the Dalai Lama stumbles over the border to India. Who are you? I'm just a simple Buddhist monk. You remember that scene? And then they switch around, and there are all these dead bodies on mules, you know, riding off into the back. You've seen this, you remember this? And more dead bodies, and more gore, and I don't know what. And he says, okay, now you talk. Here we go again. So then what am I going to say? I already just said it. So I kind of more or less said a similar kind of thing. And I said, but anyway, when people harm you, you don't have to be angry. You don't have to respond with harm. You can respond with compassion. We don't need anger in this world, actually. Anger and hatred. We don't need that. No matter what happens to us, there's no need to respond with anger or hatred. I was telling again about the Dalai Lama and how, you know, this is actually reality. Anyway, one of the kids is sitting at the front. He let out this huge gasping sigh, like this. And he said, so heavy! Tell him giving this talk, so heavy! And he's like, really, like, he can just about handle it. Now we come to the end of the talk and the bell rings again and they go. And he says, thank you very much, and go to the car, and we say goodbye, and I drove off. 2 days before the war started, actually we thought the war was going to start that day, maybe the next day. I had a very deep impression, I put a very deep imprint on my mind, this experience. I was trying to figure it all out, like, why were the kids, like, so struck, like, in awe, like they were frozen to the ground, you know, what was going on there? And I thought about and discussed with one of the students, and she said to me, because nobody has ever talked to these kids before about peace and loving kindness and compassion. And if anybody ever has talked to them about that, they haven't talked to them in a way that was completely from the heart, like they meant it, like they believed it, like that was their passion, that was their, like... And she said, and also, they don't have peace in their lives. They said that they don't have peaceful lives at school, they don't have peaceful lives at home. The parents don't teach them about compassion. The parents don't teach them about loving kindness. They don't see it when they watch TV. The friends don't talk about it. It's not, it doesn't exist for them. They don't know what it is. They don't know what loving kindness and compassion and peace is. Of course, they do know. They do know because they heard what I was saying. But it was like when you're exercising new muscles. I remember when I was, it's actually quite a holy thing, you know, you could put that word on it. I'm not saying that I'm holy, I'm just saying that by the blessing of the Dalai Lama's example and these precious monks and what they have done and the Buddhist teachings, it actually, you're putting them on a spiritual level, and most people haven't touched that. It doesn't exist anywhere. It's not in the papers. It's not, where is it in their lives? It's not there. I remember when I was very young, my mother took me on pilgrimage to a place called Walsingham, and there was Catholic, maybe partly Catholic, also high church. Anyway, they had this little room that's like a replica of where Jesus was born and where somebody had seen the Virgin Mary. And there was a tremendous atmosphere of prayer inside. I remember I stood there almost transfixed by that energy. And my aunt grabbed me and she pulled me out of the room and she said, "You shouldn't be exposed to too much of that kind of thing at your age." It always stuck in my mind. I'm like, why not? Why not? It's like it's dangerous for kids to be exposed to this kind of thing. And then you see, I started to understand why America was going to war. Because America doesn't understand the meaning of peace. They think peace is something that you create by defeating your enemy. They think peace is something that you create by destroying those who could harm you, by subduing them, by basically becoming more powerful than anybody else, you create peace. That is their meaning of peace. You identify your enemy, you destroy your enemy, you, even before they become powerful, you feed them, you feed other people to destroy them, and that is peace for them. They don't understand that peace comes from your mind. They don't really know what peace means. There's not that understanding. It was a very big realization for me, because if these were the kids, and these were the future generation, you could understand why the adults were doing it. If you could affect the kids, you could affect the parents. You can't affect the nation because they're all feeding off the media, and the media is not teaching the meaning of peace and compassion and kindness. And the Dalai Lama is very cute, you know, and they put him on the TV programs, but they don't listen. It's like a novelty. If you have the karma, if you have the openness to hear, you'll hear it. But otherwise, it really, the teachings that are needed, the understanding that's needed, is only contained within spiritual traditions. And spiritual traditions are like becoming almost unpopular, isn't it? It's like... So, we fast forward now, 2 days later is the day when the war begins. And that day, it had already been prearranged, I was going to give a public talk at a public school, and this was a school assembly. And it's a whole, it's a huge school, and it's a public school. That means there are thousands of kids there. And these kids are 17 years old, which I calculated was the number of years that I've been ordained. So these kids were born when I became a nun. 17 years old, these kids. And there's a public school where there had been knifings. The kids actually had stabbed other kids and killed them. It was a huge place. Florida, you can imagine, pretty out of control, really out of control. And this assembly, the subject was world peace through inner peace. Oh no, the path to peace, that was the subject. And we're driving there, and on the way, there are all these huge, everyone's, you know, the guys are holding the newspapers, you know, like they come out into the road. I don't know if they do it in New Zealand, but in America, they come out into the road to sell the newspapers. And the heading is, "War Begins." And I thought, oh, well, there you go, isn't it? And the teacher said to me, I said, you know, you would have more chance if the war hadn't broken out. Once it's broken out, it's more difficult. You know, it's like trying to do purification easy before it's ripened. So you have the assembly, and there were several hundred kids there. And what were they doing? They were like laughing and joking and talking. I couldn't believe they were so uncontrolled. The teacher said to me afterwards, "They were so respectful to you." I said, "What?" She said, "You have no idea." She said, "Really?" And the other ones, they both said to me, they said, "You have no idea." She said, "They really treated you with respect." He said, "You haven't seen how they treated other speakers." Anyway, so there you are, and you're up for it, right? Because there you are, this nun talking about peace. It's like, oh, right, we'll get her. I mean, in a place where you have knifing, so imagine... So I said, will you talk? So I gave a little bit of a talk, and I was trying to make it so simple. And I was talking about how you don't need anger. Even if somebody harms you, you don't need to respond with anger. You don't need to respond with hatred. And they were like, and there's a few of them were getting it, but a few, oh. And I talked a little about the Dalai Lama, and I talked about the Second World War. So the Second World War was a good example. I said people were fighting, but not because they were angry. They were fighting to get rid of Nazism. You know, many people gave up their lives. For what? To eliminate Nazism from the world. I mean, this honest Dalai Lama said that, he said last century, he said that there have been three wars that were justified that he could see of all the wars that had happened. And one of them he mentioned was the... was the Second World War. No, maybe he only said two. There are only two. I think there are only two. But one of them he mentioned the Second World War because he said, you know, people really gave up their lives to eliminate Nazism. Doesn't mean everyone had great motivation, but the general thing was not because we hate the Germans, we're going to kill them. No, it wasn't like that. It wasn't like that at all. So, anyway, I was just talking in the same things. You don't have to get angry. You don't have to respond with anger. You can, you know, compassion is far more powerful. If you have the courage, it's far more powerful. Anyway, so they listened, and you could see that they were like, their minds were like, they could only take a certain amount. They really could. It was like there was just like a little bit of light there, and that was all. So you would just try and get that little bit of light, and then there was no point carrying on anymore. So I said, okay, now, so it's an hour after about 10 minutes. I said, okay, now, has anyone got any questions? And this guy stands up, and he said, oh, I've got a question. I said, okay. He said, so how are you supposed to defend yourself without anger? And all the kids just burst into laughter. Like, she's so stupid. I just thought about laughing. It's like, get on your mate. I looked at him and I said, I repeated it back to him. I said, so how are you supposed to defend yourself without anger? Yeah, they laughed even louder. Oh, that was really funny. She can't even answer the question. And then I said again, so how are you? And he was kind of looking around to see I got her. And then I said again, so how are you supposed to defend yourself without anger? And I said, not quite as much. And then I said one more time, I said, can you defend yourself without anger? And they stopped laughing. They're like, is she serious? Is she for real? And then there was just this quiet. Oh, is that interesting? At the end of the talk, this young guy came up to me. Some of them just ran out. You always have this experience. Some people, they just cannot handle it. They can't handle the pure Dharma teachings. They're not ready. They can't handle it. They run away. But there was a whole bunch of other people. You could see it was like they were drinking the most delicious nectar and they were so happy. This whole bunch of kids, these young kids, they just all gravitated and they all came forwards at the end. And there was this one young boy, and I'll tell his story. So he had this, his hair is like all spiked up, slicked up with, I don't know what, where you stick it up, cream, brill cream, get a bounce. So he had brill cream all snatched up. And he has like diamond studs here and here and probably here as well. And he's kind of like, you know, like this. And he came up to me, and I was just on the stage, just like this, and he came up, and he's talking to me, but he can't look me in the eyes. He can't actually look straight at me, not like this. He's going around like this. And he says to me, great talk, I like your talk. It's very nice, very good, yeah. So, but it doesn't work, can't do it, it doesn't work. So you've got to get angry. You have to hate. There's always people can harm you. You've got to hate. You've got to be angry. And I was just sitting there quiet, and I just looked at him, and I said, no, you don't have to be angry. You don't have to hate. That's your decision. He said, no, you've got to hate. There's always people can harm you. You've got to hate. There's always people can harm you. You've got to have anger. This went on for a little, it went on for a few minutes actually, and I just kept on repeating, no, you don't have to be angry, you don't have to hate, you don't have to hate people, you don't have to be angry. That's the decision that you make, you don't have to do that. And went, no, you've got to be angry. And it's going on and on like this. And suddenly, after I'd said, no, you don't have to, suddenly he just, it's like something just broke inside him, and he says, I don't like this war, it's not fair, we shouldn't be having a war, it's not right, we shouldn't have, and he just ran off. Rano. I was thinking, what is going on here? And I was thinking about this for a while, and then I thought, you know, he wasn't telling me, you don't have to have anger, you don't have to hate. He actually believed, he had heard what I said with his heart. He had heard it, but he was checking to see if I was for real. Does she really mean it? Because no one has ever told him before. No one had ever told those kids before they don't need to be angry, they don't need to hate. They didn't know that. They actually, it was like, they didn't know that. And he had heard with his heart, but he wanted to make sure. And that was why he was repeating over and over again, no, you have to. And suddenly he realized, no, she means it. And it's like, oh, now I'm free. Now I can say what I really believe. And he said it and he ran off. Amazing. Oh, then it was completely obvious why America was going to war, wasn't it? It was totally obvious. There's no idea of peace. One of the kids said to me, well, how do you get this peace? And I said, you don't have to get it. I said, it's always with you. It's the nature of your mind. As you don't go of all the things that are disturbing, you are peace. That's what you are. You don't have to go out there and protest and demonstrate. You are peace. We're all peace. It's like, it's not something outside of us. It's just the nature of our own beings. And if we've never touched that, we've never experienced that, then of course we're constantly looking outside to try and find it. You know, well, the teacher told me that one of the parents called up that afternoon and complained to the principal. I said, we understand you had a Buddhist monk there talking anti-American propaganda. I seriously never said anything about America or the war. I seriously did not. I only talked about peace and compassion. And that was anti-American propaganda. Complained. Teacher said, don't worry. So the principal was there and saw the teachers and they'll vouch for you. But that's how it is, you see. And I don't think, you know, I'm telling this story in the context of America, but all these stories I see as having a more kind of like just a whole generic, because isn't this true of New Zealand also? How many kids are grown up being taught the value of compassion, the value of kindness, to be taught that they are peaceful. They have everything in and of themselves, so you don't have to go outside, you don't have to look outside for everything. You have everything that you need. You're born with it. You just have to uncover that, reveal that. Every single one of us is born with infinite precious qualities. Infinite precious qualities. You don't have to go and book into a university or a college or night class to learn something else. You've already got everything precious you need within you. You just need to uncover that, reveal that. It's there. So we gave out these bookmarks, and these bookmarks had slogans that my teacher dictated to me. One day he called me up and he says, okay, you know, write this down. He said, I want you to make these snappy. And he wrote down a whole list of slogans he'd put together. He puts them all around his car, and then he drives along with his car with all these slogans. It can be quite dangerous because people come in close to read them. I've actually been driving with Rumshe in the car, and a car has come and gone like that and circumambulated. Just reading all the and three of the slogans there Rumshe put together, and we made little bookmarks and gave them to the kids. And one of them says like this, it says, no anger inside means no enemy outside. No anger inside means no enemy outside. I wanted to make up a whole bunch of car stickers to give away to people with that one. No anger inside means no enemy outside. I was talking to Rumshe one time, and I was saying to him, you know, the people at the centre, I said, you know, they're still angry at me, Rumshe. He said, you're still angry? He heard what I said. I thought about it. I thought, yeah, I'm still angry. No anger inside means no enemy outside. You know, why does the Dalai Lama not hate the Chinese? Because he doesn't see them as an enemy. He doesn't have any anger. How can he? How can he? He just feels compassion for what they're doing. He's just trying to sort it out. It's like compassion for both sides. It's like he's just trying to work with the karma of sentient beings, which is so complicated and built up over so many years. One day Rupa Rinpoche said to me, he said, you have no concept of how difficult it is trying to help sentient beings. He said, the karma is just so interwoven. He said, it's like, it's really hard. Like, you know, spider's webs and spider's webs and spider's webs. So no anger inside means no enemy outside. That's very nice. And the next one we gave out was less desire. Oh, hang on, did I say that? Oh yeah, here it goes. Less desire means less pain. Less desire means less pain. Now, I don't know. I think the kids could, some of the kids could get the first one. I'm not sure about the second one. The second one needs a bit more thought, doesn't it? Because we have all this conflict, we have all this stuff going on inside of us, and life is so difficult, and we have been suffering for a long time. We haven't had the tools to work it all out. Because of that, what do? How do we deal with it? Our solution is basically to either kind of deaden it or distract ourselves, you know, distract ourselves away from it. Because we don't really know how to deal with this stuff. And one of the best ways to distract is to look for something out there that will bring happiness, that will bring pleasure. So we always look outside, for something. Always looking outside. Now the interesting thing is, so I often give the example, there's this movie called Jerry Maguire. Yeah, I remember the title today. It's good. Normally I'm trying to find out the title. I still don't remember the lead actress, but I remember the title. It's Tom Cruise, isn't it? Yeah.
Emily Bell.
Yeah, you're sure it's her? Yeah. All right. What? Anyway, there's a famous line in that. Anyone not watch the movie? Oh. You don't have to, it's not compulsory. There's sort of a cult line in that. Did you watch it? No, Tom Cruise and Rennie, what's her name? Zellweger. All right. Anyway, they're staring in each other's eyes. And it's this long, you know, final found romance, I don't know how to put it. And she says something about, you know, I've got it all mixed up. Anyway, the line is, I think he says it, he says, you complete me. You complete me. It kind of went into American mass culture. That's the kind of culture it is. you complete me. And it's this kind of notion that there could be something out there, another person, another thing, a situation, a job, a position of power, a position of respect, that there could be anything out there at all that could complete us. What that is indicating is that we are not complete, that we have something missing. And that is the basis upon which we operate. That's true, we operate on that basis, that there is something missing, but we'll find it. You know, it's something out there, and when we get it, we'll be complete. But of course what happens is, we look and we get this and this and this and this and that, and even when we get the object, it doesn't complete us, we find we need another one, or we need more of it. And so there's this endless trying to find the thing that's going to complete us, the person, the situation, the place. Now, Rinpoche explained that there is an inherent flaw within this very concept. Of course, it's an unspoken concept, we never say it like this, but if you examine your view, you'll find this is how we operate and how we've been brought up to operate and how everyone else is operating, society is operating. This is what keeps society going. You know, America is a culture of, you know, spending and buying. It's consumer, that's it. In other words, what does that mean? That means continually wanting more and continually wanting better. America doesn't get scared when it drops bombs on this country or that country. America gets scared when people stop buying. That's what freaks them all out. The economists, they don't care they spend billions of dollars on bombs for this country and that country and run up trillions of dollars of debt, because no one's going to ask them to pay. They don't care. They get worried when people aren't going to Walmart and spending on Thanksgiving Day and this sale, because they run the country on consuming. It's a consuming country. You've got to keep buying new cars. Keep buying new cars. So you've got to keep people continually wanting more and continually wanting better. And one of the students said to me, he realized the teachings were starting to hit home when one day he went to the mall and it occurred to him that he didn't need anything. And it was such a shock. He didn't quite know what to do. Turned around and went home again. So we are brought up to continually want more and continually want better. Now, Buddhism, so Rinpoche says, he says, there's an inherent flaw in this. Why? Because as long as you're looking outside of yourself for something, you will always suffer, because it's the very nature of the mind that is looking outside, wanting more and wanting better, to suffer. That mind is a suffering mind. Why? It's a restless mind, it's a dissatisfied mind, it's discontent. It's almost like you're perpetuating a wound. You're keeping a wound open, do you see? So what is the Buddhist solution? Actually, if you want to get realizations, if you want to get concentration, it says very, very clearly, contentment. Not wanting more, not wanting better. Rinpoche says, the minute you think to yourself, I don't need anything, you're complete. Too simple, yeah? Too simple, too obvious. There were lamas in the past who used to give their students the mantra, I don't need anything. I don't need anything. Actually, I found that we were pulling a fairy card last night. I pulled out this card and it said financial flow. And I said, what's all this about? It doesn't make any sense. And then Yeshi said, oh, I think it's about abundance. I said, oh yeah, well, I've often said that. I said, you know, I don't have anything, but I have a complete abundance of everything. That's true. So the minute you don't need things, not that I'm saying I don't think I need things, of course, and I'm still working with my mind, but when you my teacher, he says, the minute you think, I have everything, I'm content, the minute you have that thought, he said, everything's okay. It's like, it's all right. The suffering's gone. It's like so contentment, a very old-fashioned word, but actually a very deep and a very amazing kind of thing. So I think some of the students, they went away. Yes, she was doing, you don't mind me saying this, do you? She was doing, but not because, no, nothing to do with me, she just her own enlightened activity. She was walking around saying, I have everything I need. Yeah, she did it that way. She said, I have everything I need. It gave you a bit of a hard time there, didn't it? Yeah. I always say to people, don't think these are magic cure-alls. They bring up all the resistance to it. That's why they're so precious, because they show you the work you have to do. And Nita, were you doing... Oh, no, Emily, I think... Anyway, somebody else was doing, I don't need anything.
Jody.
Oh, Jody was doing, I don't need anything. No, she was painting. So as she was painting, she was just saying, I don't need anything. I don't need anything. And she had always, she was somebody who always, she would say herself, always had this sense that she needed something from outside. And if you've ever met her, you'll know. She doesn't need anything. She really doesn't. She's just so beautiful. She's such a beautiful being. And it's coming out now that she's realizing that she doesn't need anything. When you realize you don't need anything outside, you don't need anyone to complete you. Just be beautiful for everyone. You know, just, you don't need anything. So very simple. So less desire means less pain, Rinpoche says. He said, well, you don't understand this. He says, it feels like people are just trying to take everything from you. It's like, you know, well, all I have is my desire. If I lose that, what am I going to do? He says, you feel like a balloon that's been pricked. He's like, oh. He says, well, you don't understand. But he said, when you start to understand the teachings, when you start to understand the mind and how the mind creates happiness, suffering, then it's just the breath of fresh air to hear this. Less desire means less pain. You mean I don't need anything? No, you don't need anything. You don't. That doesn't mean you don't have to have things. You can have things, but as Lama used to say, it's like, oh, I can't remember it. It's just you just develop this attitude that if it's there, it's there. If it's not there, it doesn't matter. I don't need it. You just enjoy it in and of itself for what it is, without grasping, without being attached, without trying to cling on to it. Because that's what attachment does, you see. It clings to the object, it can't bear to be separated from the object, and then you suffer. And it's like drinking salt water. You want more and more and more, and you have so much expectation about it, and so you suffer because it never quite lives up to your expectation. And this is why there is just so much dissatisfaction, and all this dissatisfaction is just created by our own minds, wanting. Rinpoche, my teacher, Kevja Sopa Rinpoche, he says, there is no end to wanting. There is no end to wanting. So simple, isn't it? He said, you want this, and then you want this, and then you want this, and then you want this. He said, it never stops. It won't finish. He said, from morning to night, from birth to death, you'll keep wanting things. No, will never stop until you let go. And then he gives the example of people who have billions of cars. Rinpoche said, you might have a billion Lexus in the garage, and you might have a billion swimming pools, and you have, you know, hundreds of servants running around doing everything that you want, and be so miserable. He says, because your inner life is empty. Your inner life is empty, Rinpoche says. He says, your heart is empty, it's dark. He says, not just empty, but dark. Inside, you're crying, Rinpoche says. Outside, you have everything, but inside, you're crying. Your inner life is miserable. Your inner life is empty. They're very descriptive. I said to Rinpoche, I said, there's a very descriptive way of putting it. He says, yes, I like it. It's nice, isn't it? So I want it to be descriptive. Your inner life is empty. Not only empty, but dark. Of course, this brings us back to the three wrathful mantras of Sambhogyari. Whatever comes, let it come. Whatever goes, let it go. Don't have need of anything. Of course, it's very simple, but don't think it's simplistic. It takes a lot of thinking and working with to find out how this could work for me and what it means, and to really just kind of get to the essence of it quite clearly so you don't have misconceptions. I remember people put their hand up and say, but I still need to drink. And I say, yeah, we're not saying don't drink. We're not saying don't eat. It's just we're looking at all the emotional... Look at the emotional minds. Look at all the trillions of emotional minds that cause suffering. Why? Because you think you need something. Because you think there's something out there that could complete you, and there's nothing. There's nothing out there that can... You don't need completed. You don't need to be completed. It's a question of letting go. Letting go of all those things. Simplifying life. We have everything we need. The peace is inside of us. And so you had all these people in America protesting for peace, and they were getting so angry because nobody was listening to them. And this guy, and he's driving me, he invited me to go and give a talk in Tufts University, and he's Buddhist. And he says, it's really hard to be a Buddhist at university. I sympathize with him. I was thinking myself, I was walking through this campus thinking, and you know what it's like at university, it's like this one sleeping with this one sleeping with... And I thought, you know, now how on earth could I communicate with these guys that less desire means less pain? Of course they know it, can they stop it? No, because it's the drive is so strong at that age, isn't it? And like the director in Florida said, you just never think about death when you're that age. And this guy is driving me to give this talk on peace, and he's saying, I think I'm going to go down to New York. I'm going to protest against the war. I don't believe in the war. He said, what do you think? I said, well, yeah, you could do that. He says, I'm going to do it. He says, I'm going to have a huge billboard, Buddhists for peace. And we're going to walk really mindfully. What do you think? I say, yeah, you could do that. And then the next conversation is how he's having a fight with his dad because he wants to go up to Mongolia to this big Buddhist festival and his dad doesn't want him to go. You know, his dad's like spending thousands of dollars for his education. He just wants to run off the mountain to be a Buddhist monk. And so he's in conflict with his dad. He says, don't understand me, I want to go to the Buddhist festival. And I looked at him and I said, you know, it's really great to go and you know, make a stand for peace, but don't you think you should be a bit more kind to your dad? It's like, it's too obvious, isn't it? And I said, you know, you're working really hard. I mean, it must be costing a fortune to educate you. I mean, do what he says. At least listen to him, don't fight with him. Try and compromise. It's not outside, it's inside, isn't it? Like I say, all those people are getting so angry, Israel-Palestine, why are they fighting? And then they start dropping bombs in Afghanistan, dropping bombs in Iraq. Starting their own Israels and their own Palestines. Because they think it's outside, it's not outside, it's inside. So this constant looking outside, it in and of itself is suffering. It is a suffering mind. The mind that is desiring and craving something outside to bring happiness is a suffering mind. The mind that is blaming what is going on outside as being the cause of all our suffering is a suffering mind. The minds of anger and the minds of attachment, they're both suffering minds. And of course they come from the very root, ignorance, not knowing, not understanding. So it's not like you sit there in judgment, it's just like you have to somehow do the work so you come to a stable understanding about this. You have to somehow. In Buddhism what we're trying to do is change our way of viewing things. Develop more wisdom, develop more understanding. Remember what my mum said? You know, you Buddhists, you're all the same. You all look like you know something nobody else knows. My mum actually adored Buddhists. I would just drive her to the centre and she'd just sit in the car and she'd be so happy. She's so peaceful here. She'd feel so happy. She just loved it. I mean, she was longing for peace. And peace, you can't go to a holiday park to get peace. You can't go to a movie to get peace. You can't go out for a nice meal to get peace. And a nice meal were really the cause of happiness, then we would all be blissfully happy. I often say this, people in third world countries, they look at movies of Australia, New Zealand, America, and they cannot believe we are suffering. They say, there can't be any suffering in that country. Possible. Look at the cars they drive. Look at the houses they live in. They turn taps and water comes out. Look at the hospitals they go to. Look at the education. It's impossible that they're suffering. They think, if only I could come to the West, I'd be happy. Because like Mother Teresa said, you can do something about the poverty in Calcutta, but much harder to deal with the mental poverty in the West. Why? Because we're not happy, we're not content. We want more, and we want better all the time. 11:31. Many, many years ago when I first met Buddhism, I was in Bodh Gaya. Those days it was very it wasn't developed or anything. And I was sitting in a chai shop. I'd only just met the Dharma. I was sitting in a chai shop drinking tea. And a chai shop in India is like a broken wooden table and two broken wooden stools and a filthy little glass cups and flies everywhere and basically a kettle with tea grains in it that you boil over and over and over again and strain with some milk. Sugar and these kind of toxic little biscuit packets of biscuits that they sell. That's a chai shop. I was sitting at the chai shop and I was drinking my tea and biscuit. And there I was, finally I was traveling. I met Buddhism. I was down in Bodh Gaya and I just started my travels and I met the Dharma. And it was. And I had a money belt full. I haven't told you my story, but I had a money belt. I had loads of money in my money belt. I was good. Travel for years if I wanted. And I'd met Rinpoche and I'd done a Kopen course, I'd taken refuge with Lama. And I was sitting there drinking tea and this beggar came up. And this beggar, he's like, thin, skinny, with a little bit, just a leather cloth wrapped around him. And he's beaten tin bowl and a stick. And he comes up to me with his deep sunken eyes and he stares at me and he holds out his bowl. So I took some coins, some paisa around and put some coins in his bowl. And he walked off and he turned around and he took the bowl and he stuck it, took the coins out of the bowl and he stuck them into this little cloth, the rags he was wearing. He stuck them into the rags and he came back and he stuck out the bowl again. Now there is an unwritten kind of rule that beggars are not allowed to go to chai shops. It's like homeless people are not allowed to walk into McDonald's, right, and walk around. I mean, it would be nice if they could. It would be nice if people would hand $5 or 10 or 20. But there's an unspoken law, isn't there, that you don't do it. And if somebody were to do that, they'd be shooed out by the manager. So there's an similar kind of thing. If you're walking on the street, it's okay, but at a chai shop, you don't disturb somebody. It's bad for business. And there's also an unspoken rule that if someone gives you something, you go. You don't keep coming back. And so anyway, he told the paisan, he came back and he stuck the bowl out and he looked at me with his deep sunken eyes. And I thought, very, very pitiful. And I thought, well, you know, he's probably hungry. So I put a couple of biscuits in his bowl and he walked a few paces. He walked half a turn around, took the biscuits out of the bowl and stuck them in his cloth. And he turned around and he came back and he stuck out the bowl. Like nothing had happened, you see. And then I started a little bit irritated. I thought, oh, well, but he must be really hungry. So I just gave him the rest of the packet of biscuits. And he walked a few paces back. He turned around, he took them out of the bowl, and he stuck them in his bowl. He kind of stuck out the bowl again, looking at me with his deep sunken eyes. As though I hadn't given him anything. And now I was actually really starting to get irritated, and I looked at him and I thought, you know, even if I was to take off my money belt and put it in that bowl, you just walk a few paces back, you turn around, you stick it in your rags, and you come back and you stick it out again, like nothing had happened. And then I started thinking, but look at this guy, I mean, just look. I mean, look what I've had in life. I mean, this is 82, so India was really a third world country, but I'm thinking, you know, I grew up in a house that had carpets on the floor, and a tap that water came out of, hot water and cold water. We had holidays, we had a car, a bank account. I mean, I had an education. I had so many clothes and toys. I mean, look at all the things that I've got. And I thought, but you know, if I were to take all those things that I've had in my life and put them in your bowl, you'd walk back, you'd take them out, you'd turn around, you'd stick out your hand again. And I suddenly realised that's what everyone in our world does, everyone in our society does. Takes all these things and keeps sticking out the bowl for more, for more, for more. Okay, I have this, but I want more, I want more. As New Zealand is having a war of houses, isn't it? Everyone's selling houses. As I say, since I came to New Zealand, I decided the New Zealand dream, this is how I figured it out, the New Zealand dream, you know, you've heard this before, right? Basically, you find a really nice plot which has a good view. Then, you build a house around the windows. You live in it for about 3 years, but what happens is other people discover that piece of land and start building all around you. So while you're living in that house, getting it all ready, everyone else is bang, 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 building their houses. After 3 years, you sell it and you go and find another one. It's like, and you build that around the windows, you know, and then you move on. It's like, it seems to be the New Zealand dream. Everyone's selling houses in Auckland. I don't know, it's just like nearly every house seems to be for sale. Why? So you can buy a bigger one and a bigger one and a bigger one. Anyway, I'm not saying anything wrong with that. I'm just saying, it's symptomatic, isn't it? Wanting more, wanting better, wanting more, wanting better. So where is this going to? This is just coming back to the fact that happiness, suffering come from the mind. So one has to watch that. And Rinpoche says, Rinpoche came to Florida afterwards, another visit. I went back to Boston, came down again for Rinpoche's visit. And Rinpoche gave a talk to all these students in Hawaii University. Miami University. And he said, make the decision now. I'm content. I have what I need. And the third bookmark we gave out to these kids in this public school, there was nine things, the third one. So first of all, no anger inside means no enemy outside. Less desire means less pain. And the third one was for happiness, cherish others. For happiness, cherish others. Very simple, but so profound, so difficult. And really, you know, when I look at Rinpoche's book, now Rinpoche's book's got several different things in it. First of all, there's understanding happiness and suffering come from the mind, how the mind creates our lives, how we create our minds, create our lives with our minds, our happiness and suffering. Then there's breaking the fixed concept that if I'm sick, I'm going to die, or if I'm not sick, I'm not going to die. And using that to really think about the main purpose of my life. What is my life about? Understanding karma, law of cause and effect. Understanding how things are simply labeled by the mind. This is wisdom, rising emptiness, and compassion. this book has some of the most exquisite and incredible teachings on compassion that I've ever read from anybody anywhere, and that's not just because this is my teacher, seriously. There are amazing teachings on compassion, this book, and you know, first I don't feel so qualified to teach them, but secondly, I would like some time to just do a course on compassion, just the different methods for developing compassion and meditations, because I feel like in just one talk I couldn't do justice. But if you do buy this book, or you can borrow this book and read this book, even if you just read the first chapter, it's incredible. If you can read any of these, if you want to know about compassion, my teacher, he really is the living embodiment of the ultimate healing, the ultimate compassion. And this is an extraordinary, extraordinary book, the teachings on compassion. But it all gets synthesized in that one, for happiness, cherish others. So someone said to me a couple of days ago, and they won't mind me quoting them, I know, that they said, because I'm telling the story about the sad story, and they said, you know, I used to be the walking sad story until I met the Dharma. And they said, I used to be a walking sad story. I was the universal sad story my whole life, and then I met the Dharma. And I said, well, what happened? And they said, well, then I just got myself out the way. I just stopped caring about myself. And it all changed. And this is just, that was such a beautiful...